session number 11963, reel 2.
Time when you were Captain Henderson, reel 2. We were talking about the time when you were up at the stables.
Yes.
Working for the...
And then all at once we were ordered back to the drill hall again.
How long had you been up there, roughly speaking?
Well, I should say a fortnight. See.
So it would still be in August when you went back to St. George's.
Oh, yes, that's all. So we were ordered back to the drill hall. And we... took drill. We were marched from the drill hall to a suitable place and commenced the rudiments of drill and this sort of thing.
Now, what do you remember about your drill training? How did it strike you at the time?
Well, it was strange, of course, but one realised that you were in the army, and I made up my mind there and then that I was in the army and I had to stop thinking about other things. I was in A Company, which was the Quayside Company, George Harbottle, all A Company. And I'll say now that most of the A Company, as we knew it, to go out to France, were commissioned.
So the men you were with were very much men of your own type. You know, they'd come from similar backgrounds.
Yes, if I was as good as them, I would feel prouder still. You see, but they were the what they call the Quayside population, men of money, and this sort of thing.
Now, how long were you at St. George, based at St. George's Drill Hall before you moved?
Oh, I should say 6 weeks.
So how far had you got with your basic training in that 6 weeks? Were you just still on drill, or had you moved on to rifle?
Just on drill, yes. when we had to do anything but drill... We were marched up in Northumberland to a place near Morpeth to do drill, open order drill, getting from the squad to extended order and this sort of thing. We were taken up into Northumberland. And the brigadier for our brigade lived up there. You've been up to Hexham, have you? That's the 4th Battalion. Well, I was the 6th Battalion. And it was the 4th, 5th, 6th and 7th Northumberlands. It was the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th and 9th Durhams. And then in the other brigade was East Yorks and Yorkshire. Yeah.
And that was the 50th Division?
That was the 50th Division.
Now... So you were at St. George's Drill Hall for about 6 weeks, through to the end of September, roughly speaking. What were conditions like? Were you actually in barracks? Did you have proper barrack rooms and things there? Or where were you sleeping?
Well, we slept in the hall.
Just on the floor?
On the floor, yes. I had mattresses, you know, and this sort of thing.
The biscuits?
Biscuits,
straws.
That's right, yes. And I never took any harm. I never felt like I wanted to be home purposely, you know. I just mucked in and was made a Lance Corporal. Oh.
Well, that was almost straight away then you were made a Lance Corporal?
No, it was just after we got to France.
I'll come back to that then. So while you were at St. George's Drill Hall, it was mainly basic drill.
Basic drills, yes.
And then you went out into Northumberland to practice anything
yes.
a bit more fancy.
For instance, our firing range was at Ponteland, a well-known army firing range. When we took rifle work, we went to Ponteland.
How did they train you to fire the rifle? Because it's not necessarily that easy to learn how to shoot a rifle.
No, especially when you fire your first shot and nearly take your shoulder away and this sort of thing, you know. But
What stages did they take you through? I mean, they didn't just hand you the rifle. Did you get to practice on a smaller version first or anything like
oh,
that?
Oh, yes. You first of all, you had to know your drill with the rifle, about porting arms and this sort of thing. You had got used to the weight and whatever it was, and of course, at a quiet moment or two when you were doing nothing, you were pulling the bolt back and pressing the trigger, making believe there was ammunition in, you know.
Did they give you a go on the .22 range?
What's that?
Did you get a chance on the .22 range?
Oh, yes. That was a special club. The Army Commandee had a rifle club for that sort of thing, for the small, very small ammunition. But for the Army, we went up the Army range. There was an Army range at Pontiel in those days.
How did they teach you to aim? What advice did they give you about aiming?
Well, you had to line up your rifle with a bit on the fore end, you know, with the bit on the back of the rifle. And I was a very good shot, as a matter of fact.
You had no trouble then?
No trouble at all. Later on, with a rifle, I won quite a number of prizes with shooting from the hip and running and shooting, you know, and this sort of thing.
But when you started, after the first blow on the shoulder, you got used to it.
Well, now, I might as well admit, from the time I joined until I went to France, I had sore places on my body, what with arms drill and army firing and that sort of thing, getting down and getting up quickly. Oh, they put you through it all right, but we're all people who had were living well, they weren't ill or anything like that, you know.
What about bayonet training, bayonet fighting training?
Oh, yes.
How did you do that?
We had the fact that you lined up, and in front of you at a distance was a heap of bags hanging from, you know, and you had to run from various distances, and when you got there you had to plunge the bayonet into the sack, and I don't think I was ever faulted.
Did you actually practice the sort of fighting with a bayonet? I mean, not just charging with it, but the actual bayonet fighting.
Oh, yes, you had to do a little of that, but they didn't seem to be concerned with that. It was, I think, the combined mind keeping you fit by making you run with the bayonet.
What about route marches? Did you go on route marches?
Oh, route marches, yes, and we used to go up as far as Berwick sometimes, go out for the day, and by the wayside for your lunch and this sort of thing, you know, and come home exhausted at night. We had plenty of marching, by Jove, we did. And I knew Northumberland more after I finished in the army than I'd ever known before.
Would you have regular stops every hour? Or?
Oh, yes. There was a regulation in those days that you had to have 10 minutes, I think, in every hour, which we obeyed, and the officers used to be on their horses, of course, and they would dismount. If the colonel dismounted, you had to dismount too. I soon found, when I got a horse in the army, if you weren't off it, the moment the colonel dropped you, he had a few words to say to you.
So you'd... did you take a band with you, or were they allowed, are the men allowed to sing while you were route marching?
No, not on those journeys, but there were route marches, special route marches, which we did, which had the band there.
How did the local population react in Newcastle and round Northumberland too?
Well, I must say that the attention and the help, the population gave you was tremendous. For instance, in the end, we were billeted, George Harbottle and Company, and which was A Company, was billeted at Seaton Delaval. Naturally, of course, most of the houses there were of colliery origin, and there were miners, the miners' wives and miners' families. And from the moment we settled in Seaton Delaval before we went out, they were magnificent in supplying you with extra food and scarves and this sort of thing. Now, whilst we were at Seton Delaval, we had to do 3 nights in the trenches at Seton Sluice. And then have come back to have a rest, you know. And the people of Seton Delaval were marvellous. I've always had a very high regard. And it was from Seton Delaval that we set sail for France.
Now, just to sort this out, so you were at St. George's Drill Hall for about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Now, where did you go after that? Is that when you went to Seton Delaval? Or?
That's right, yes. Well, we went to, first of all, we went to the race course.
The Newcastle race course.
Newcastle, and we bivouacked there.
What, in tents?
That wasn't a very pleasing experience because the weather was cold, you know. You can't always get particularly warm. But we finally settled at Seton Delaval.
And that's where you went to billets with...
Yes. That's where we found a job. Really going to Seton Delaval meant that we were occupying the trenches on the
coastal
coast.
Defenses.
And each company and of the battalion and each platoon had a night or two to spend there.
Who dug the trenches?
Eh?
Who dug the trenches? Had you had to dig
them? We partly dug them. They were rough when we got there. But we sort of trimmed them up and made them as best we could. There wasn't much to bank on because it was all sandy and whatnot, you know. But we came out. There was a bugle call went, and we came out and marched up the avenue, and we had a song marching up the avenue.
Do you remember it?
No, I can't remember it now, but come back, and we occupied 4 halls in Seton Delaval before we went to France.
They were your billets?
Eh?
They were your billets, were they?
Four billets. There was the miners' hall, there was the engineers' hall, there was various halls like that.
What did you think of the conditions, the food you were getting?
Oh, the food at Seton Delaval was good. There was no doubt about that. I don't think there were any complaints.
What sort of stuff were they giving you?
Well, we always had bacon in the morning, you know, a fried breakfast. And luckily, my Lance Corporal, when I joined, was a Jew, so I got his bacon every morning until we moved, this sort of thing. You're either lucky in the army or you weren't lucky, and I was lucky in that respect. But Seton Delaval wasn't a bad place to be in, because, as I say, the miners were very generous in their attitude to what they say.
What would the army fix you up with for lunch, dinner? What food would you get for dinner, lunch?
Oh, well, in those days it was mainly cooked in Dixies, you know, the heavy black Dixie. But when you are in England, of course, you are always liable to get little treats from the cooks and this sort of thing.
Were you still getting on very well, you know, as your training progressed, with your fellow privates?
Oh, yes, yes. I think you made friends. You made friends. And there were a decent crowd. You might say that I got in with territorials who already knew the army way, and the people who joined with me were all new and had the option of joining the army. Otherwise, outside of that strata of the population, they were out of work and things like that, you know.
Did you find, I mean, A Company was, as you say, a little bit special. It was the Quayside Company.
Yeah, that's right.
How did the other ranks, you know, the ordinary soldiers in A Company, get on with the rest of the battalion, the other companies? Was there any friction?
Well, there was that feeling that A Company was the posh company.
And how did the others react to that, you know?
And you had to take it and... get over it.
But what would they do? I mean, how did the other men react? I mean, you were the posh company. What would they do?
For instance, they all had private pocket money, whereas in the rest of the battalion, they hadn't.
But didn't that cause jealousy?
Well, I shouldn't say it caused jealousy, but the other people were aware of what A Company was. And it was glorified in their eyes because of what happened after we got to France. Because most of A Company, as I said, were commissioned.
So the people were aware that you were better off in A Company, but
yes.
there wasn't any trouble.
One has to say that.
There wasn't any trouble with men of the other companies.
Oh, no. You see, it was also indicated by people like George Harbottle. If he was a quartermaster sergeant in A Company, there wasn't anybody in the other companies on his standing at all. They were actually aware of what A Company was.
Would George be that high up by then? No, he wouldn't be that
senior. Oh, he wasn't that high up. He was a corporal about that time I'm talking about. Then he was made a sergeant, and when we got out there, he was made quartermaster sergeant.
So you got on well with most of the other ranks. What about the NCOs of A Company? Do you remember any of them in particular?
Well, besides
George, in the early days, before you went to France.
Yes, some of them were trying to be masters when they weren't qualified, you know, shouting at you and this sort of thing. But personally, I took it as it all came. And they didn't get much chance of shouting at me, I can tell you. But otherwise, I thought my introduction to the army was quite good. I learned quickly.
What about the officers in A Company? Do you remember who they were at that time?
Well, you see, there's another strange point. The officers in A Company were mainly people at the head of firms in the town. For instance, there was George Bell, the solicitor. There were two other brothers who were solicitors. There was Colonel Spain, whom everybody knew as an archaeologist. There was, of course, an army order which said that the adjutant of the territorial battalion should be a regular soldier. And you had one regular soldier, and he was the adjutant. It was quite patent. In some of the other companies, you had a chap who was well noted. For instance, there was a firm still operating in Newcastle. What did they call the firm that sold furniture and looked after? Anderson. Bill Anderson. Bill Anderson, who was an officer in B Company, a terrible company to be in if you're an ordinary soldier, you know. He was an officer there. Now, as soon as we got to France and there was someone in the brigade killed, Bill Anderson got his job. So you had that mixture. But on the whole, I accepted that there'd be good and bad, as there is in every place of the world's machinations. There would be good and bad.
Good and bad officers.
And I took the good and bad motto and got on with it.
Did you see much of the officers during training? I mean, were they part of the training?
They were part of the training. They didn't get out of it at all. If it was field dress, if the order had been given for field dress, they got in their field dress. And as I say, that's the way I went to France. And I was very lucky.
Now, did you get trained in any special skills, or like the machine guns or transport or anything, yourself? Or
no. Well, no, in those days...
Before you went to France?
Ordinary soldier. But we had people in the battalion who were machine gunners. You see, in those days, afterwards in the army, they had corps of machine gunners. But before that, they were individual members of a battalion. And they had their own little niche, you know, somewhere with a machine gun officer.
Now, you joined this territorial unit.
Yeah.
Now, they'd had training before several of them for years.
Yeah.
How long was it before you felt that you were up to the standard of the rest of the pre-war territorials?
Yes, I should say by the time we went over to France.
So it didn't take that long for you, really, to
get into
the swing.
No, it didn't take that long. I wouldn't say I was a complete soldier, 100%, but I was 97% of the way.
So how long were you at Seton Sluice after you'd gone there? When did you... You know, you weren't there in about what months?
Oh, it's going to be difficult, that.
Winter, you thought?
I should say... December 1914.
So you've been at Ponteland for about 2 months.
That's right, yeah.
In camp. And when did you leave Seton Sluice?
Leave to go to France?
Delaville, yes.
The 20th of April, 1915. And the Germans, if you remember, sent the gas over on the 22nd of... And we were immediately in a hurry.
I'll come to that. What preparations did they make for you going overseas? Do you remember? Or what preparations did they want you to make?
Well, to be honest, I can't say that they made any special preparation.
Did you get an embarkation leave?
No, no.
Any vaccinations or injections?
No, no. They'd all been done. And... as a matter of fact, I said to myself afterwards that we were landing in France when the first gas was coming over. It must have been a hurried job, and the whole division went. The 50th Northumbrian Division embarked on the 20th from Newcastle Station.
Did you get any?
We went from Newcastle Station.
Did you get a send-off from Seton Delaville or from Newcastle?
Did I?
Did you get any kind of a send-off from the locals?
Well, the send-off we got was there was one kind gentleman. It was the days when all the compartments were separate on railway trains. And one gentleman hurried away whilst the train was in Newcastle Station and bought 40 pea pots and came back to the station and hung them on the handles outside the train. That was the only send-off we got. But as far as being sent off by our relations and people like that, no.
And not from the locals, villagers?
No. We came down from Seton Delaville and got on the train.
What do you remember about the journey across the...
One of the things that's outstanding, that when we got to halfway down, we didn't go down the main line to London. We went round the East Coast way. And when we got to, we got out of the train and were excused for an hour or two, get back in a couple of hours. And there was they had a flag day, and they were taking money off the lads that were going to fight. And I always objected to that somehow or other, but there was a flag day. Yeah. And then we got to Boulogne. Marched up the hill, a terrible job getting up into at Boulogne. Yeah.
What about the crossing? Anything special about the crossing?
Nothing special, no. I'd been across the channel once or twice, you see, and that wasn't new at all.
You found the hill at Boulogne really hard then, because everybody says it was bad.
Oh, yes, it was a heavy pull. And you had everything with you, you see. Everything. Yeah.
Did you go into the camp at the top?
The camp at the top, that's right, yes.
Would that be St. Martin's?
St. Martin's, that rings a bell, yes. Well, it must have been. I remember St. Martin's somewhere.
And what were you doing, how long were you there in that camp for?
Oh, we moved the next day. We went down to trains, got in 8 horses or 40 men. And we went to Haysbrook. We detrained at Haysbrook.
So that would be the 21st?
Eh?
That would be the 21st.
Eh? And from there, we went to sleep in the fields. We had no billets or anything, you know.
Had you been briefed at all about what was happening?
No. We didn't do anything about the gas attack or anything like that. And after we got to Hazebrook, we got into various farms and things like that, you know. But there was nothing sort of orderly about it. And then after the next day, we moved up to the front line. And we spent 2 nights just in the open. And then on the third day, we went into action.
What were you actually doing during the 2 days while you were in the open?
Just lying. I believe we did bring one chap down from a plane. Oh, yes, the lads I took part to, we shot a fellow down. He was flying low over the lines, you know, and so I marched away. But otherwise, you just took your entrenching tool and dug a hole to get your head behind.
Near Hazebrook?
That's right, near Hazebrook, yeah. Well, then we moved up into the salient, and we spent 2 nights in the cold with no protection at all. And
was it cold? It was April, but it can be cold or hot or warm.
Oh, yes, that's so. And then we went into action on the third day, and we had 800 casualties, one out of 1,000.
Could you tell me as much as you remember about that day? I mean, what were you briefed before and what were you doing and what happened to you?
Well, all we knew, we weren't briefed, that's the point. We weren't told that we were going up into action, you know, anything like that. We just said that we are going to be on the move, and I was in A Company, which was leading our battalion, and our battalion was leading the brigade.
And what formation were you in?
We're in extended order, and we were going to try and take the village of St. Julian back off the Germans, who had captured it a fortnight beforehand. You've probably heard that mentioned before.
And what was the terrain like that you were crossing? Was it, fairly unspoilt or was it ruined?
It was a mustard field, and it was sort of uphill, if anything.
Not steep.
The Germans were up there. Well, the brigadier was just about 7 or 8 feet in front of me. He was leading the brigade, and it happened to be in front of the leading battalion of the brigade, you see. He was there, and we hardly moved off till he was shot dead. And after that, we went run as best we could.
Did you have all your kit on, or had you left it behind?
Yes, we had all our kit on. And give you an idea, the Germans were mass firing at us from the village, and there were that many bullets and things floating past you, you thought it was a band playing. And I distinctly remember that feeling I had. And the noise that they were making was terrific. And in the end, we were told to get out.
Now, was it just small arms fire, machine guns and rifles?
Oh, yes, purely.
No artillery?
Small arms fire.
Was it machine guns as well? Or wouldn't you know?
I wouldn't like to say.
But there was no artillery that you remember?
Oh, no, no. And the position at that moment was the British artillery had no shells.
But the Germans did.
The Germans.
But they weren't firing.
No, they weren't firing. They must have learned that we were out of ammunition or something like that.
So could you see where you were attacking? I mean,
Oh, yes. It was daylight. You could see where you were attacking.
You could see
the result of the Germans firing with the little tufts of smoke going out and this sort of thing.
Were they in trenches or just behind cover?
Oh, just behind cover. And we did our best. And we didn't know that there were English troops in front of us. That was one point that I was very sorry about.